So we thought, you know, you've all been so attentive. I mean, me too, and Seth too. We've been attentive to one another today for hours. I mean, we've been doing this for hours and hours. But I really did want to do one thing that wasn't going to happen in a kind of presentational setting, and that is to just have a conversation with somebody who's a young mycologist, someone who I've only known Seth Christman for 5 years now. Seth came from the West Coast, which is my territory. He came here because of his relationship at the time, very new, in 2013 with Emmy, who has worked with me now for 11 years. So Seth showed up kind of in our lives through Emmy 5 years ago. So I've been able to watch Seth really kind of grow over 5 years. So he showed up as one...
He used to be 5'8".
Seth showed up as he had a set of strengths, came in pretty quickly, got a job as heading up AV at the Fisher Center here for the Performing Arts here at Laurie. He was a sound design person. He was a composer and a performer. He brought those skills into play here very quickly. But since that time, well, so let's do it. I'll do it evolutionarily. So then, because Seth was part of the family, so to speak, through his relationship with Emmy, and I liked him so much, we started, me and the John Cage Trust started doing this with Seth. We were doing like, don't you want to come and help us do this? No, and he would say, of course, because he was interested in John Cage, who he knew very little about at the time. So Seth has been our go-to person for 5 years now. He did come, George, 1 year after Empty Words. So I just double-checked it because I didn't remember him. So Seth came in 2013. So he would have been our go-to person for Empty Words overnight in the Spiegelton. In all fairness, he would have been the person that did that. But Seth is a kind of very cheerful, very capable, very creative soul in sound design space, and so he's like an equal. But he's, over the years, he's become all these other things. So every time I turn around, he has a new noun that he is. And I alluded to it in a little bio. So I wrote that bio before him, except I did write and say, are there other nouns that I've forgotten? And he gave me a couple. He's like, yeah, you know, but he really is a composer. He's a photographer. I don't even think I put that on there. He's a cyclist. He bakes bread. He taps maple trees. He's a chef. Yeah, I mean, it goes on and on and on. Now he's milking cows. You know, he's really, well, you know all the things that you are. But he's also a budding mycologist. That kind of grown into that. So I want to know what came first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, you were not any of those things when you came here, right?
No, I wasn't. I was interested in mushrooms. I knew absolutely nothing upon coming here. And it really was walking in the early days, largely, that piqued my interest in trying to like get to know and, you know, seeing what individual species they are instead of just like, oh, it's mushrooms. And starting to learn more about ecology and learn, you know, trees by extension. I was very ignorant of all of that upon coming here, and I feel like now, you know, I've come away as a part of my novice.
Yeah, but I think of you more than most people I know here as being very much part of the ecology of Ward College, as much as you complain about us, you know, in terms of being out of work, but in terms of a place to be, you have found a way to be here, although you'd like more space for yourself. But do you think, so let's go back to mycology a little bit, like you're interested in mushrooms. So what came first? Do you recall? Like, I remember you, I don't remember, I couldn't tell you exactly when this was, but I remember you coming to me many years ago and asking me about John Cage and mushrooms in a kind of vague way. Like, you know, was there something you might need or, you know, or something like that. And I suggested a few things. But at that point, I don't think you were farming, you weren't, certainly weren't milking cows. You weren't, you know. So what was going on? You started hiking and seeing mushrooms?
Yeah, I was kind of spending as much time as possible in the woods near where we live, which is an amazing opportunity to be able to do that. And it's, when I lived in Seattle, I didn't have a car. I got everywhere by bike. I mean, I noticed mushrooms, but I wasn't like seeking them. I would just notice them. And I think, yeah, just by spending time in the woods here and really slowing down and observing what's around me is what kicked off my interest. And I knew Cage was interested in mushrooms, and that was always a fascination for me.
So did the interest in mycology, did that lead you into, you're a fermentologist now, you're working with fermenting things. Yeah. Was the mycology sort of what gave birth to that?
I started, I think kind of the other way around in some ways. Yeah, started just working with yeast and bacteria and fermenting things in our kitchen. And yeah, I learned that yeast are fungi. Yeah, I think it's just really having kind of direct experience with the world around me in a really visceral way, I guess.
You've done it so robustly. That's, I mean, if I were to use one word to describe your behaviors, is that, I'm not telling tales, so forgive me if this pisses you off. Sometimes, will come to work and she'll say, Seth has stuff everywhere in the house because he's got his beer making kit and his fermenting kit. So he's got, because you embrace these very sort of large endeavors, these things that require skills or they require, Do you know where you're going to land? I mean, where are you going to land? Do you have any idea? What do you love most?
I love just seeing. Observing the world around me in any way to have kind of direct contact with the world around me in a meaningful way. Like what George was alluding to in many respects in his lovely presentation. I think just, extending your consciousness and connecting with it, realizing that we're a part of the ecosystem.
And the physical world being so present for you there. Just engaging with that. Did you cook when you lived in Washington State?
I did.
You did. So that's not entirely new. You just had more ingredients when you came here.
Oh, yeah.
So for those of you that don't know this, Seth has been doing this now lately for this event, and because he's participating in this way, he's was with us last night, which was just the presenters and their guests' wives or whatever, and Seth was with us, and Seth and I together cooked dinner for 16 people last night, and Seth made all the mushroom dishes with mushrooms that he foraged. So not all, but I needed Hen of the Woods for a particular dish, and it was, they had found a few of them, he and Andy, and then finally I said on Thursday or something, I said, I'm gonna get the other ingredients, so okay, I'm gonna do it. And said that I think you should. And he called us Friday morning to say that he found 17 pounds of my donkey. So anyway, but he made these beautiful mushroom dishes yesterday. Where did you get the recipes for those? Did you make them up?
You gave me one.
That's right. Yeah. So one of the recipes that Seth made yesterday was a Cage recipe that he really loved. It's an arami shiitake stir fry. So it's a seaweed and mushroom stir fry. Very simple to make with a bit of sake. You didn't use sake though, you used something
else.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway. So does anybody want to ask Seth a question? Yeah, David.
Yeah, I have a question. When I entered mycology 24 years ago, it was a mycology club, it was educational, we learned about mushrooms, and things have evolved since then. I have a sense that with younger people in their 20s and 30s, there's a new paradigm that involves addressing the environmental crisis. So what can you say about that?
Absolutely. I think applied mycology in the circles, some of my friends who are here as well, interested in mycology, is a big focus of, I think, a lot of younger folks working with mycology and cultivation, cultivating for specifically for remediation is a big focus of a lot of folks, and something that I'm just starting to get interested in and trying to get a community lab space here at the Mid-Hudson Mycological Association, with which we could start to work and, you know, have microscopes, have flow grid, start to look at strains and potentially develop strains for specific remediation projects. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to learn from fungi as a kingdom, and yeah, remediation is, I think, a really exciting component that a lot of folks are working with right now.
Do you think, David, do you think that that's something that was intuitive for you and your generation on some level? It may not have been called for to the degree that it's called for now.
It wasn't intuitive for me. It's something that I learned, but I learned about the environmental crisis, global warming, and all of the subjects that come under that rubric, apart from my study of mushrooms. So in the years, there seemed to be a convergence of those two things, such that mushrooms lead us to a better understanding of the environmental crisis and how it affects it.
Right.
I think we have to
right. Right, but they did that for you, even right. though you didn't walk into it asking for that.
Correct.
Right. You know, John, I know John Cage once how we got into mushrooms. And he said, he laughed, and he said that it was because it was in the early 50s when he first moved out to Stony Point. He had been living in New York City. He said he was starved for nature. You see that through his letters, all kinds of things prior to that, in the 30s and 40s, after he leaves home, he goes north, and then he goes east, and he's starved for nature. And he ends up moving up to Stony Point for just a few years. But he said that he used to go walking at Stony Point because when he first moved out there, he and David Cheever and M.C. Richard, everybody lived in one house because they were building. Paul Williams and his wife Vera were building different boats, different sort of dwelling spaces. But in the beginning, nobody had any privacy. So John said anytime he was out there, he would just leave and walk. And it was doing that he discovered mushrooms. But then later, I think about Seth. I look at Seth and I look at young mycologists now and this question of remediation. And Paul, back me up on this because I'm sure it's the case for you as well. That I always feel like when I think about the world of mycology now, it all resonates for me in John Cage long before you existed. Do you know what I mean by that? It's like,
I always thought of John as a shaman. He was interested in finding food.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and I went on that absolute walk with him. And it wasn't like what we had, our collection wasn't what we had back here. It was things that we could bring home and eat. And he was ignoring the things he was good at. So I wasn't really doing mushrooming then. This was just a one-off.
It was a way to be with him, doing something that he loved.
Well, it was sort of, I was doing my job, and he showed up and said, "Today is your job taking us mushrooming." And so we went out to the cemetery, and the cemetery is very interesting.
Baldwin
World, yeah. And it was a, I've always thought of John's approach to that. You know.
Was more pragmatic, more practical.
And I started in about the same time as David in mushrooming after John died, as you know. And at that point, we were going out, and like John at that point, I was interested in eating, you know, so we wanted to be able to not poison ourselves, and so we needed to learn the basics of taxonomy. It wasn't until much later that my review of mycology expanded, but
and your view, forgive me for asking such a stupid, this really is a dumb question, but your view of mycology extended through your study of mycology.
I was interested basically in edible mushrooms, like most people. But then I got involved with a survey and it became a much more scientific situation for me. And so it became more general in my approach. But at no point, other than to grow a couple of one of those kits, you know, where was I focused on remediation? And I'll ask you this. The question I would have is, are you, and I don't know that much about it, but are you involved in the radical mycology movement or whatever we should call it, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I took a cultivation workshop with Peter McCord, who authored, who's a co-founder of the organization Radical Mycology, and yeah, absolutely.
I think we should talk about that a little, because most of us who are doing our mushroom association type things, Radical Mycology is sort of out there.
Sure. I think it's broad in scope, but a lot, you know, there are various focuses in terms of like growing food very low tech with using basically what is otherwise waste material, you know, like we can cultivate oyster mushrooms on cardboard and coffee grounds. That's a powerful tool for communities to have food sovereignty and learn how to grow their own like high protein food alongside a community garden pretty easily now, you know, you put a pressure cooker and not even you can pasteurize straw. And as long as you, you know, have a mycelium, which is quite easy to once you purchase a, you know, culture strain, it's quite easy to continually cultivate. Just in a mason jar using, you know, very nominally expensive equipment and low tech. You can grow food for yourselves in the communities, grow medicine for yourself in the communities, and develop strains that might be able to break down some of the toxins from industrial society.
Gary once told me that there's beginning to be a thought or a use, I don't know, of like shelf mushrooms to replace plastic. Have you?
Totally, yeah, that's something
so
that's...
Is Bard helping you with that?
Not to my knowledge, no. But there is a company based out of Albany, Green Island, a company somewhere up there called EcoLive, yeah, that is doing just that. I think a number of other folks are doing that as well as a replacement for packing material.
Exactly.
Biodegradable.
I've heard like those styrofoam things, all that crap that is being replaced by.
Totally, yeah. I mean, that's an excellent application for fungi. And I think the more we learn about it, you know, the more applications that there are that can help the environmental crises that we're facing, I think.
It's just interesting to me that, you know, so many people, going back to what you were saying, Paul, about jumping and chow down, which is, I think, marvelous, it's perfect, it's true. But the world, Kate was such a beloved person and such an optimistic force in the world that they want to sort of retrospectively give him quality. You know what I mean? Give him qualities. And one of them was, remember, I think you were around. I remember maybe any of this before it set, but when the Ace Hotel in New York came to us and wanted to program some cage music, I think it was for the Centennial in 2012. And we said, sure, of course, that'd be great, but why? You know, what's the occasion? And it wasn't just the Centennial, they were showing I forget the name of the company, do you remember it? But it was a burial suit, and it was made by an American company that was lined with fungi. And so it was literally something that covered your entire body, you know, fingertips to every inch of you. And they gave away as a prize three of these burial suits to this day. People were like a raffle. They did a couple of beautiful string quartets by Cage that were almost sort of ritualistic burial music. But anyway, it's really beautiful, but I realized even at the time that seemed like an odd thing for Cage. Because, you know, but that isn't to say I couldn't hear him say, isn't that marvelous? You know, isn't that marvelous? But it wouldn't have been something that brought him, he would not have brought that forth, I think.
Well, I didn't know that, you know, I did not know him being involved in that. He was feeding people.
Yeah, no, I get that. He almost poisoned us. He did. We were in Tellurite, right? Not for the Mushroom Festival. We were there for Other Minds Music Festival, which was there for 3 years, and then it was no longer there. And we went foraging for mushrooms one day. and Cage, I know nothing about, this was my first, really my first look at this world, which is just such an amazing experience. But anyway, we went looking for mushrooms, and Cage found mushrooms, and for dinner, there was about 20 of us that he was cooking for in our host's home, and he was pretty sure he knew what the mushrooms were. Pretty sure. And there were only like three of us that would eat them. So it was me and Cage and somebody else. And literally, I remember that first bite thinking, I could die. This could be it, you know? And it was a rage experience, you know, John didn't kill me. And we were all fine. But, you know, but he was just kind of pretty sure. And he almost did kill himself several times. There's one story about that, reflected in Indeterminacy. You probably know that story, where he almost killed himself. Anyway, I don't want to get
I've been reading a bunch of things in preparation for this, and there's a fellow in our club, the way I won that name, who tells people when we're all gathered around table talk, he said the way to find out about eating mushrooms is to have very little bit of it. And if you're okay, then have a little bit more the next day, and a little bit more the next day. And I always then step in and say, okay, that's one way to do it. Which I would call mushroom roulette. The other way to do it is to learn your mushroom and identify the species, genus and species, right? And so I'm reading this page, and he's just rattling right off what this fellow is telling the people. So, what can I say?
But it gives a chance to almost poison somebody else.
Who?
Don't hate.
Yeah, that's true, it's true. Is it true? Can I ask one question? And I'll just ask you, because are any of you guys that know this? Am I dreaming this that Guy Murray was actually a rhododendron specialist? He was.
You're not kidding, he was.
Okay. I couldn't remember if I made him up, but he was, right? Toward the end of his life, he became a rhododendron specialist.
He had three nurseries. Each of them ended with some tragedy, either financial or fire or something.
And he was up here, right?
Yeah, he was in New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. And so he was a rhododendron specialist. And what he did was he took exotic rhododendrons and hybridized them with native rhododendrons and developed a lot of strains which are currently
still
very strong. But he was also the first naturalist at Green Brook Sanctuary in New Jersey, of Palisades. He was there in 1949, 50, I think. So he got a little too tested between him and the ladies' garden. He laid out all the trails that are there. And he did a survey of the property, of the mushrooms and mushrooms. And it was that, actually, that naturalist, one of his successors, said to me, we have this 49 list. Let's do something in 2007 and compare it to the 49 and see what it
is.
So that's how I got into the more widely.
And he died not so long ago, right? I mean, within the last 5 years or so?
Yes.
Yeah. Any more questions for Seth?
Seth, my generation was brought up kind of like Fulton and really younger generation. How do you see mushrooms as helping your generation along in more ecologically sensitive, better stewards? And do you interact with the folks who go to school here? And is there any active indoctrinating?
That's a good idea. I'm not aware of a lot of mycological interests on campus, though I suspect that a lot of folks that came today.
That this was the first, I think, this is the first that I've been aware of on this campus.
So that's cool, and I'm sure that your presentations today may have provided food for thought on that subject for people might just be getting interested in this. In terms of, I guess, generational views on mycology, I do think that like mushrooms are having a moment right now in like the general consciousness, which is really cool and long overdue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was just approached by the Department of Agriculture in Israel that because of global warming, which doesn't exist as we know, because of global warming, they see changes in the parks. And Israel is very important because there's so many people living there that there is really not enough space for parks and for nature and for very interesting habitats that exist over there. And young people are now. Young mycologists are now being conducted in surveys. Whereas before, not a single park had a mushroom survey on it. As if the trees grow on their own and absolutely no relation to mushrooms. When we started screening, that we have seen totally different mushrooms appearing and that the mushrooms that used to grow there no longer grow there. And that the trees, some of the trees are dying now. And for no reason whatsoever. And that some of the mushrooms actually begin to fruit almost 2 months early, and then sometimes they come a second time in fall. All kinds of weird things are happening. That's when they started putting in young mycologists. And the divinity apparently offers some way of making money for all of these areas, which are very, very expensive.
That's hopeful, isn't it? Totally,
yeah. I think you touched on the point of citizen science, which is another really important component of mycology, especially, I think, an aspect that a lot of younger mycologists are interested in right now. Is documenting what species that they're finding in their bioregions. And if you have evidence to that there's all this biodiversity and that industrial activities are impinging upon it, then you might have a chance to bureaucracy and through the judicial system to fight.
Which is a huge breakthrough, you know.
Totally. So yeah, I think that's an important component of mycology and for our generation to take on.
Just an interesting point. Juliana Percy from Chile working with the government, developed a program to start education. And it's an ongoing, evolving level of detail as they go up through the 12th grade.
The government is actually paying for it.
Yes, and they're developing a model that can be applied anywhere in the world. It's just a matter of, it's all there, it's just a matter of individual school districts, or I'm not sure if it's states or who controls that.
What is the name of the person?
Juliana Percy. Yeah, it's a foundation fungi.
She's
an international group that's working on it, and that they're trying to manage from the U.S., but it's a matter of understanding the bureaucracy of the school districts in each of the states, and then even within the states, each of the districts that exist, whether they have to do anything. So they're looking for people that can help with that cause, but they have all the materials that will be able to change
for it. That's amazing.
Great. It was a question right behind. I'm sorry, I can only see your finger.
Actually, I just want to say I work here and once a week they have like a wellness program and they have lunchtime sessions on the students. And so they're becoming more interested in offering sessions on like foraging. So doing walks through the woods. So part of that, looking at bark, looking at pine, looking at mushrooms, so it's not necessarily at that detailed level. But then they'll take the students back and start to make cosmetics and make teas and things out of it. So the awareness is kind of like growing, but it's part of the health program, the wellness program for students, which is exciting.
So that's part of this whole thing we're talking about, you know, the context for the rise. What is that context? How has that shifted?
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, in 1971, this country, the Forest Service, had a mycologist, a national mycologist.
Yeah.
And his name was Orson Miller, actually.
Yeah.
And then he went off to UVA. But while he was there, he was working on how to make pine trees grow better and faster with mushrooms in 1971. So it could happen again.
Kate loved Orson Miller.
All the ladies did.
Yeah. All right. Shall we wrap up first? Anything else?
Yes, of course.
So we celebrated you on stage today, and Gary Winchcock today. And it's important to remember the individuals who dedicated themselves to a pursuit. In Gary's case, he made mushrooms. Cage dedicated himself to music. We tend to think of history as eras, you know, that are kind of boxed in. But it's my belief that history is made by individuals, and they should be encouraged in whatever way. Charles Peck, as a young botanist, had encouragement from people in the state government that saw to it that that position was created, and Charles Peck devoted himself to it, and that brought professionalized mycology in the United States. My point simply is, Seth, you're, you know, he needs to be encouraged. You know,
he so is being encouraged. Excuse me.
But you never know where you may end up. You know, just, you know, staying with it, and it could take you 10, you know, decades later, you know, to bring a whole lot of people along to the place.
He knows that.
The family of mycology will be a wonderful family to be a part of.
It is.
Okay, thank you all for your patience today.